What's up, everybody? David Pollack here of See Ball, Get Ball podcast. I hope you like it, man. Be sure to follow the show wherever you subscribe, YouTube, or any of your other platforms. All right, welcome back into See Ball, Get Ball. I am your host, David Pollack, joined as always by Brent Rollins, writes for PFF, writes for Rivals. Off-season topics, man. We Palooza, I love it. We've got some interesting stuff to talk about. Texas makes a big Texas, we find out that they're spending big. Texas football. Yeah. Not surprised. We'll talk about details of that. UNC, the gift that keeps on giving, Bill Belichick and his girlfriend, daughter, granddaughter, whatever we want to call her. Obviously, there's another topic. And then we'll talk about the spring game, this post-portal, you know, top five, so to speak.
And does it change?
Yeah, and where we're at with that, because obviously now teams have inked guys and changed looks, but where do we want to start, big fella?
Well, first off, we got to start local because it was announced this afternoon that the Falcons got fined $250,000 as a team, and then $100,000, I think, to Coach Jeff Albrick. Because I wanted to ask you, if Nasser came to you and said, "Dad, I'm sorry, but I cost you $100,000." At your job, how do you handle that when your 21 year old kid just cost you 100 G's at your job,
bro?
I can't even imagine that.
That would not be good. You know me too. I mean, I as cheap as I am, Nicholas knows this. My son knows. I talked to him. He speeds a little bit, and so do your kids. I've seen them. They move like
yeah.
And I'm like, let me be very clear. If you get a speeding ticket, Nicholas, your insurance goes up. Guess who pays the difference? He was like, who? I was like, you. You'll go get a job and you'll pay the difference. It's been a great speed deterrent. But my gosh, if your kid cost you that much money, first of all, I'm going to be like, tip of the cap because I love the prank. I mean, it's funny. It's creative. We used to grab the phones when we were younger and make prank calls that were stupid and harmless. And I don't think he meant anything, obviously, by it. It's just, to be funny, to be a jokester, but you take 100 G's out of my wallet, we're going to have some conversations about your next employment because it's going to be somewhere.
The dad tax that is like Halloween candy, it just went.
Taking your cut?
It's extraordinarily up. Whatever. Hey, first paycheck, son, I'll take my 25% reimbursement, if not more, for a long time.
A long time at that rate.
Well, another sort of semi-fun topic that we've discussed a little bit on here is golf. And this week they had the Southern Company Peach Bowl Challenge, where a lot of coaches and former coaches so kind of wanted to play golf and, you know, compete for charity. I think that it's over 300,000 or something like that they donated to charity. So we want to have a little fun with that, because if we look at the pairings, there's 11 pairings. We got Shane Beamer, Houston Nutt, Manny Diaz, Paul Johnson, PJ Fleck, and Tom O'Brien, former coach, Hugh Freeze, and Steve Spurrier. Instantly, I thought that was a funny group, good group. Brent Key and Chan Gailey, Dan Lanning and Randy Edsel, Jeff Monken and Army, and then Derek Dooley, Pat Narduzzi, Pitt, and then Rick Neuheisel, and then Mike Norvell and Urban Meyer, by the way, who were the defending champions.
Those two and are? Then,
yeah, Norvell and Urban Meyer were the defending champions.
Okay.
Kirby Smart and Gus Malzahn, and then Kyle Whittingham and Jim Grobe. So, so Norvell and Urban Meyer were the defending champs. Is there anyone you think in that group that could have taken them over this year? Because I did look at the results to see, because they played, I think, yesterday.
Well, I feel like
instantly when you look at that, like who do you think is good at golf?
Well, I feel like Dan Mullen has been playing a lot of golf. He's been on vacation.
Well, he's not on the list, though. Dan Lanning was on the list, not Dan Mullen.
Oh, okay. So I must be the wrong year then.
Yeah.
It says 2025. It says Dan Mullen and Scott Satterfield.
Okay. I didn't see that one. Okay. Then they must have been in it as well. All right. Didn't see that.
Okay. So I know Kirby really well, and I can tell you this. Kirby doesn't play a lot of golf, but Kirby's one of the most competitive human beings on the planet. Like, psychotic, want to kill you. I don't think he plays enough. I don't know about Gus. I feel like Rick Neuheisel might be pretty good.
He's a broadcaster, right? He should be able to have a lot of time to play.
Broadcaster, I feel like you got a chance.
He was a QB.
Yeah, you got a lot more time. Mullen, again, has had a lot of time on his hand. Dooley, a lot of time on his hands. Brent Key.
I completely missed the Mullen pairing. My bad.
Spurrier, I mean, that's all he did for 100 years. Spurrier, let me tell you something. Spurrier in coaches' meetings, he was probably he gave you the least amount of information. He didn't give you a lot of information. But if you asked him about what he was doing, like, he was like, oh, I went and played golf. Like, always playing golf. Obviously, the game of golf loves would be more willing to talk about the game of golf, really, than football. But if you made me pick one, I'd say Mullen. No, Mullen's not that athletic. It's not Whittingham and Grobe. Grobe is a little bit older.
They're the most likely to be talking about the grandkids.
Yeah, I'm not going there. Chan Gailey's a little too old for that to be in the competitive. Dan Lanning is a super freak competitive. Randy Etzel's been pretty. What about Lanning and Etzel? I'll go Lanning and Etzel.
So they were the third worst.
Nailed it!
Norvell and Urban Meyer won it again. Let's see. Pat Narduzzi and New Heisel got second. So you were right in terms of him being able to play some golf. And then I think Hugh Freeze and Coach Spurrier were third in terms of that. So who out of that group, by the way, out of all those pairings, who would you want to just hang out and play golf with? Be the third wheel and just be around, play golf with those guys. And then I've got some other sort of fun superlatives that we're going to kind of look at a little bit.
Golly.
As it relates to this. All right, well, while you're thinking about it, let's go to this. Okay. We'll give some superlatives.
There's a team I wouldn't want to play. There's a team I'd want to play with the least. I can promise you that. Go ahead.
Okay, so that, we might have to get to that. Who do you think is most likely to break their club over and break a club over their knee?
I'm going.
So mad. Lanning. I wrote down Dan Lanning. I feel like the hyper competitive young guy would get so mad that he'd bust a club over.
And he's still in his 30s, so he's still got that piss and vinegar. Probably he still cares too much.
So which group's most likely to just cuss the most, drop the most four letter words all over the place in either frustration or just in normal conversation?
I know these guys pretty well.
I thought you might have some inside information there in terms of.
Oh, I know these guys so well, man. I mean, I've spent time with everybody on this list.
I had my guess.
I mean, Kirby's not. I would say Kirby. Just okay. And it doesn't matter who the partner is. I think Kirby's going to be general, the worst.
In general, Brent Key was maybe my guess.
So Spurrier would probably not drop as many, but Spurrier would definitely be high in that list too. I'll never forget Spurrier walking in my living room recruiting me, and his confidence was so different than every coach that stepped in my house. Like, it just, I mean, you could say arrogance, you can say confidence, you can say whatever you want, but just like, you know, why would you go to Georgia? We're just going to beat Georgia every year. That's what we do. I'm like, it's just, you know, he was just one of those guys that just, I mean, he just had so much confidence and was not lacking, and he's golfed for so many years. So I guess he could get pissed, but I don't know. Who'd you have?
I said Brent Key, just because as an O-line guy, it just feels like that's ingrained in your DNA as an O-line guy.
Yeah, I was looking. I was the hard part was like the hard part is the pairings, because like all of them kind of have somebody with them that you don't know about. Like Manny Diaz, like he could be. I bet Manny Diaz could be super competitive and fiery.
Yeah,
but like
so that was.
PJ Fleck could be fiery too, but his Tom O'Brien with him. Anyways, go ahead.
Speaking of Manny Diaz, most likely pairing to cause a fight or have a high level of uncomfortability amongst the two of them.
Manny Diaz
and Coach Paul Johnson would say something just to create some friction there. I feel like that might be one. I mean, they used to coach against each other.
And Paul Johnson, he's got some quips. Like he's. He'll talk out of the side of that mouth fast. I feel like Pat Narduzzi is awful. I've never seen him play golf, but like I know he's a big defensive guy, buffoon like me. Like it just,
yeah.
I don't know why. I just feel like where did they finish? Where did Narduzzi?
Him and Neuheisel were second. So But
okay, well, new highs, a lot better than an animal. I wonder how they do the shooting too, by the way, the pairings, like with the best score on the hole, like total score, match play. But these are,
I saw the, it said points, so I don't know how they did it in terms of that. But who tells the best jokes?
Munkin, Jeff Munkin of Army. Dude's a stud. Really? He's freaking fantastic. He's funny, got some sense of humor, would have great stories. I'm going Munkin.
Okay. Best off the tee, best driver. I went with the sort of younger guy. I said Norvell. I figured he would, and they won it. And I saw a quote that Urban was saying that Norvell carried him off the tee.
Okay. Well, if you cheated then. I mean, of course you went with
Norvell. I said it before I wrote it down. I wrote that down before I read that. But
what about Row the Fleckin' Boat? PJ Fleck out there dropping tanks?
I mean,
hey,
possibly.
Best dressed, I guarantee you, is PJ Fleck.
Okay.
PJ Fleck would be
highlights or the picture or something.
High vest, like probably just looking very dapper.
Kirby will have a visor on.
Most likely will be a preacher. Houston Nutt. I mean, Houston Nutt's a fun dude, man. He's a great dude. Shane Beamer, I bet you would be fun to kick it with. Shane's got plenty of personality. He's kind of spunky. I like Shane's personality. I mean, it's a good group. I wonder if there was any trash talk among groups. That would be fantastic to watch.
Yes. All right. So here's the last one I got. Who's the most likely to crash the cart for be over aggressive with the cart driving?
Kyle Whittingham.
Because also, I thought that would be either Fleck, you know, with his rowing the boat and just, hey, let's go, or Kirby just being competitive and wanting to race people in a golf cart.
Wow. Yep.
Well, good group, but fun. It's one where you get to see their personalities somewhat, but not truly, not in their non-football element. And that's all. It would be interesting for fans and whatnot to see these guys in those sort of non.
Hey, now that I can drop tanks and play some golf, I want to jump in one of these one time and see what you can do when you're competing. That'd be a lot of fun.
Speaking of competitive and speaking of competing, last year, the sort of poster child for how much money we're spending. Do you remember who the poster child was last year?
I mean, Texas Tech in the offseason.
Well, offseason, yes, but last season, what was the number?
We talked about Ohio State the most.
Ohio State and the $20 million number, right?
Yeah.
Well, we now have our poster child for 2025 in terms of spending. There was a piece that came out today in the Houston Chronicle that talked about Texas and through a connected source that I'm going to read it exactly as it reads on the article that, you know, given the portal additions, it currently sits somewhere, quote, between $35 and $40 million, which counts the likely revenue sharing allotment expected to be $20.5 million, as well as payouts from the Texas One Fund. So now you have your poster child number for roster cost. Whether that's actual or not, I'm sure it's close and in the vicinity.
Well, again, I said this when NIL came out, and I'll continue to say it. The biggest beneficiary is Texas, is the state of Texas, Texas A&M, Texas, Texas Tech. Money runs a little bit different down there. Again, that $20 million they just found in their couch cushion, okay? Like, it's not a big deal. And the reason it's interesting, Brent, because the salary cap that's coming, like, because we basically have a number that we're supposed to stay under, like, it's basically free for all right now. Like, until that July point, you can hand out as much money as you want. So the smart teams to me and the teams that have a lot of money, I'm spending the mess out of it for the future. While when the salary cap comes into place, I'll be a little bit more hamstrung. So, you know, listen, everything's bigger, better in Texas. They've been to two Final Fours. Everything's trending in the right direction, and they're probably ready to take that next step. Like Ohio State, they were tired of not being there and not getting the mix. Texas fans want to win, and so putting some extra zeros and some extra commas, put it on my tab.
Put it on my tab. I'm sure there's a lot of those that can easily say that. It'd be nice one of these days. The nerd in me, I went to the math of it, just thinking about how 40, if 40 is the number, since that was the top number that was mentioned in that range, top 30 guys, probably getting right around a million on average of those top 30 guys. Maybe your top 10 are getting a little higher, quarterbacks even a little higher, and then maybe 20 through 30 not as high. And then the other sort of 75 or maybe around 150K to 200K each. That's absolutely still doing pretty well.
Not even remotely where my brain went, but I'm not surprised it's where you went. I mean, it's NFL-like, right? Like it's a salary cap and how you want to divide that money up. But there's no secret that the quarterback, I mean, Quinn Ayers' money was talked about. He got $1 million going to Ohio State out of high school and then transferred to Texas. So he was making over $1 million. Arch is going to make over $1 million. Like that's standard operating procedure for a quarterback. But that's also why that rule is in place now, because it's ridiculous the numbers that have been thrown around, and it is a true definition of separation of the haves and have nots. If you're going to do that, like if you can spend $12 million on a quarterback and a lot of places can't, that's ridiculous. You know, I mean, that's crazy. You still got to hit your guys and you still got to develop and you still got to build a culture. So this doesn't mean Texas is going to win a natty. I mean, but it definitely, just like Ohio State, when you watch the draft and they had 14 players drafted, second most in any draft history, Texas is doing the same thing. They're building a bunch of talent that has a chance to be very successful.
And this was something that we actually haven't mentioned, but I saw it a little over around a week ago, that Kentucky is turning its athletic department into an LLC. And
smart.
Like I've seen some comments about this and how this potentially looks at ways where college athletic departments can basically be their own private company.
Absolutely.
And it removes them from like Title IX and all the rules and regulations that come with being associated with the school. So,
well, and the tax breaks that come with it, and the obviously employees, the write-offable income that you have, that's a big deal. That's smart.
And also, like, how far are we away from a billionaire saying, "I don't want to own the Celtics. I want to own, you know, Texas or the Texas Athletics." Like, that might be a thing.
That's great.
Within 10 years. Possibly. Well, who knows?
Let's go ahead and start pulling our money together.
I have a few hundred to add. I can be a 0.0000% owner of something. Like the people that own the Packers. Like I can be one of those people.
Yeah, baby.
Speaking of the NFL and then NFL transitioning into college, we it's been interesting over the past few weeks. There's been some odd interviews and a lot of rumblings and things coming out of Chapel Hill. And it's hard to maybe even describe.
Weird. It's weird.
It's weird. Let's call it like it is. I have weird interviews. And then I saw there was an article today that basically insinuated in a way that the girlfriend, I actually don't even know her name, but
I don't either,
kind of killed Hard Knocks, that they were going to do there. All this stuff was set up for Hard Knocks, and then it was axed at the last minute. So independent of the weirdness of that and the dynamics and all the things that go with that and her email being on things and whatever, you were very bullish on Chapel Bill coming to college football.
I think he'll be very successful.
Do you still think that's the case? Or is any of this just sort of red flag after red flag being like, this could just not be good potentially?
Well, here's what's strangest. The most strange thing about this to me, Brent, is the Bill Belichick we knew for 40 years coaching NFL football. Like that guy was anti anything to do with him. You didn't know anything about his personal life. He didn't care. It was just football. Don't ask me about this. And now, like, he's on Instagram and he's on social media. And, like, it's just – it's weird. It's different. You know, but here's the bottom line. There's nobody – now, listen, how she behaves around the players and if she's a whack job, like, that can absolutely affect the building and the players. But most of these kids think it's pretty awesome that Bill has a young honey. Okay, I'm just telling you. You can say it how you want to say it. Most of them are like, dang, Bill, do
your thing. Coach.
I can promise you. Okay, that is the reaction.
Have at it, coach. Have your fun.
They're looking and going, that's a good work. That's good work, Bill. That's a great job. But his ability to coach, his ability to run, you know, to have some of those, like to hire the right people and to have a GM and to come in and run it like a business, to have some finances, but most importantly, to do what he does best, I think is what's why he's going to be great. He's going to screw quarterbacks up with great, you know, confusing things. That's what he does. He's elite of elite of elite at it. One of the best to ever do it. And he's going to be able to develop kids. So I don't know that he's going to have the best talent. I think, you know, the Mike Vrabels of the world and the Teddy Bruschis, and he had good guys all the time, but he was always finding talent and always developing them. And I just think that he'll be able to do that. I think he'll have more of an imprint on the game. I think coaching matters even more so in college than it does in the NFL, especially when the quarterback position isn't so slanted, you know? And so I'm interested, but I think North Carolina will be much better than they've been, for sure. I have no doubt saying that. I think they're going to take steps in the right direction.
I was hesitant, and mainly because of the player part and the picking of players, because I think he kind of, over the past, you know, the latter part of his tenure in New England,
he's stuck at being a GM.
The drafting part of it and picking and finding guys, it's like...
I think it's easier in college, though, Brent. I don't think it's as difficult in college. I think college, you can find the intangibles and you can find the other things in college a little bit differently, I think, than the NFL. NFL, like, to be great, you have to have discernible traits that are great 99% of the time. There's outliers, sure. But I think to find physical kids, tough kids, mentally tough kids, like, you can smart. Win with that in college. Like, if you win with a bunch of kids that are smart, that play together, that are tough as nails, that will hit, that will be physical, like, you can do damage and win football games.
He got a new quarterback, Gio Lopez, in the spring portal. That was one that was kind of, if you look at Rivals, the website just posted a sort of spring portal winners. And North Carolina was actually one of those that was listed in based upon some of the additions that they had. But they also had some that left, which I thought
That happens always too, right?
Because, hey, I don't like this style. I don't like how the system fits me, things like that. I thought that was, you know, but looking at it. But, hey, if they get the quarterback right, that oftentimes cures a lot of what ails you, especially in college football.
Would Tom Brady agree with that? Yeah, I think that worked out well for Bill.
Yeah, worked out well. The spring portal did close, and we've got sort of a few later additions, I think, that were impactful in a way. The Pena kid from Syracuse ended up at Penn State, the receiver. I think that's very impactful for them. Bernard Gooden, the defensive lineman from USF, that was one of the highest graded defensive linemen from PFF, ended up at LSU. And LSU is actually, if you look at sort of one of the winners listed in the portal because of how they overhauled their defense and their defensive front with Pyburn coming from Florida, the Peyton kid from FSU, some others that ended up at LSU. So one thing we thought it would be fun to do is to kind of look back and see, now that all the portal happenings have happened and changes have been made, would we alter our early top five that we did actually the night after the national championship? And just out of curiosity,
my first question is, do you know my top five? Because I don't.
I actually didn't remember ours exact order. And I only remembered number one and number two because we had those, but we had them flipped. And all right, so looking back at that, I had a top five of, we'll go five down to one, Oregon, five, four, Penn State, three, Notre Dame, two, Texas, and then one, Ohio State. Your top five was Penn State at five, Clemson at four, three, Oregon, two, Ohio State, one, Texas. So either way, that was the one you definitely remembered. Either way,
I found mine, by the way.
Back in your notes?
Yeah, there I looked back in my notes. I found them. So sweet.
Good job by you. Note keeper guy. Does anything change? Do you look at anything that happened through the both first portal season and then into the spring? Do you want to alter that in any way? Like, hey, this is my everything. These are rosters that are kind of set now. I'm changing or moving or doing anything different, thinking different.
No. Sure don't like my order. I mean, listen. Penn State at five to me is high anyways. That's like Penn State, to think about them and You know, they haven't been traditionally at this spot consistently. Obviously, you lose Abdul Carter, but the guys coming back in the system, I still think Penn State's a team that's going to be incredible. And Pena's good. He's a good player. That's a good receiver. A guy that your quarterback can depend on. You know where he's going to be. Good route runner. You know, not a super speedster, but I think Penn State's got some natural guys like that. Some tight. I think they're going to be great. Clemson went in the transfer portal, so that's good.
Yes.
I mean, that's a good sign for Clemson fans to evolve. Again, Tom Allen is another reason why I feel confident in this. Like, I talked to a Clemson player the other day, and he said, and I quote, night and day. Like, night and day. And excited like crazy to play defense in this system. And so that was cool to hear because, again, Tom Allen – he loves hard, and he is that Dabo culture guy. He is a perfect fit. Elio, remember it, like love everyone always, or whatever it was at Indiana. He had that saying, and it was good, and that's who he was. But he also will have a hoarse voice because he'll be on your ace, and I like that. And Clemson needs some Venables to get in your grill and make you feel uncomfortable. It's a part of being a coach, man. You need guys with intensity, and then. You know, Oregon, I don't really know what they're going to be, but I know how they recruit and I know how Dan Lanning coaches and I know what their system is. So that doesn't change anything. Ohio State loses 14 guys to the draft and tons of guys that you're looking at, and they're still going to be ballers. They're still going to be really, really good. I'll say this. I don't know that I would put Ohio State too. I can say that. Like, I might move Ohio State down the list a little bit because – losing all those guys, all those seniors, and losing Jim Knowles now, which, by the way, since we've done that, we haven't done that. So that's where I would say I would make a change because, you know, Jim Knowles is great, really, really good, really unique system, very good with employing versatile players and having some versatility in his defense. And I thought just as much Brent as the defense evolved or the offense evolved last year, the defense too did too. And you started to see more different looks and different coverages, which is, again, kudos to them for changing. So, yeah, I would move Ohio State down. I'm still going with Texas because, you know, they just spent $30 million in this offseason. What the heck? Why not? $40 million, whatever it was. Like, obviously, recruiting has been, you know, really, really good. Portal has been good. Arch Manning's going to be good. Wingo's going to be a star at wide receiver. You got tight ends from Cal. They've upgraded more and more. So I think I'm still good with Colin Simmons. I'm still good with Hill and Muhammad. Like, they're still got dudes, bro.
Yes. Lots of those. And I think the biggest thing, and something that I think looking at the totality of all that we didn't know the night of the national championship that you do know now, is no Chip Kelly and no Jim Knowles at Ohio State. And Jim Knowles now at Penn State. And if there is, I think if there is one reason where you slightly tick them down a little bit, it's more of the coaching aspect to me than it is the roster turnover, because Ohio State, like Texas, they're always going to have to, they still have the best offensive and best defensive player in college football. Like, yep. Period. By a long shot, actually.
You know, the interesting thing about Ohio State is to be that talented, Brent, a year ago, to lose like they did and to not dominate, like, that's got to say something to you. You know what I'm saying? Like, to have that many great players, but still have so many moments where you looked at them and you're like, man, now listen, playoff run.
Michigan's still happening. Michigan's still happening.
Playoff run's different. Playoff run's different. They locked in whatever they did in that, they need to bottle that up. Like, but there was also, you remember going to the Tennessee game, Kirk's talking about the Ohio State fan base and Tennessee's going to have a home game. And like, so they're still – they got a championship, so that's all they need is a ring. They can say, kiss the ring, you know, suck it. I don't need you to worry about it. But, like, but I'll be interested to watch the culture because Chip Kelly's good with players. Jim Knowles is good with players. And, you know, those guys being gone is a difference. Ryan Day is going to have to do more, and it's a different blend for sure.
You look at kind of both of – if you look at a top six in a way that – because – a lot of ours are the same. I had Clemson right at six. Clemson and Penn State are the only ones that are bringing back their starting quarterback out of those six. Texas, obviously, Arch and the expectations, and I think he's going to be really, really good. but he's still a new starter. And he's got to go on the road in game one at Ohio State, who has a new starter in Julian Sain. Notre Dame with the Carr kid, new starter. Oregon, Dante Moore, new starter. So, and that's, and we talked about this when we closed up the draft, looking at the mocks of 2026. It's all the all these QBs, but it's not QBs that are sitting on traditionally the traditional powers that be in the sport. So some others, would you consider, do you still think Georgia is a team that is outside looking in of this top five?
Yeah, absolutely. I'm not putting Georgia in the top five.
Are they you closer to 5 or 10 with them?
I mean, I wrote down UGA, Notre Dame, LSU, and Michigan as teams like on that next tier that I was kind of looking at. But dude, like, I mean, Georgia, they lost a good bit, Brent. I mean,
they had 13 guys drafted.
Yeah, I mean, that's a lot of guys drafted from a team that, you know, Kirby said did his best coaching job yet, like just to keep them in order. I'm interested to watch them, man. Like the offensive line, like got a bunch of guys drafted pretty high too and pretty good picks mm-hmm. that are now rebuilding, reloading. They couldn't run the football last year. And there's just – here's the thing. If you tell me they had to fix one thing, if you're telling me it's Ohio State and they got to find the quarterback, freak show at wide receiver, next running back up, offensive yep. line didn't even matter a year ago. Like, I've got some great building blocks. Like you said, best defensive player in the country. Like, that makes it easier. Clemson, I'm deciding with Clemson. Quarterback, wide receivers. Like, I got this.
Check.
I've
check.
Got dudes I can depend on. Let me ask you a question. Who are you depending on right now that you're saying is an All-American for Georgia? Because I could have named five a year ago.
Yeah.
Give it to me, Brent.
Nate Frazier's a maybe at running back.
Like, this is the first time to me going into a season where I'm like, who are Georgia's dudes? Like, who are the guys? Like, defensively, offensively. I mean, I think Gunner's going to be the QB. You know, I don't have any doubt about that. I think Branch is going to be one of the best players in the country with the ball in his hands. Like, he can be elite of elite with the ball in his hands. He's got to catch it for sure. And he's got some drops. They've just got so many places where I go, there's a lot of holes. And listen, do I know there's talented guys on the roster? Yes. That's why I'm talking about them in the top 10. Could it click and get better? Gunner could be better than Beck. He can be. Yeah. He has more variety probably with the run game and he could do a little bit more. But no, I can't tell you what's the position group. What's the person, what's the three or four people like that I'm attaching the Georgia season to that I know they're going to be successful because I don't see it. Like, I don't know what it is.
Well, especially when you look at, okay, KJ Bolden at safety. Great. Well, who's your other one? You know, you feel good about, you know, your linebacker core. It's great, but who's on the defense? Who's playing defensive front for you? It's a lot of
who's rushing the passer?
New guys. Who's rushing the passer? Backers. Like, you got transfers there. You got new guys. You got one out. You got a couple in. Like,
you got one corner you really like, and then you got another one you don't. I mean, offensively, like offensive line, one running back, transfer portal obviously might help that. I don't see – like Notre Dame, Brent, I know what I'm going to get from Notre Dame. Like I'm going to get a physical offensive line with a lot more guys. I got a guy's back, obviously. I know what they're going to be. Like
Jeremiah Love at running back.
Yeah, I mean, I don't know, man. It's weird because I feel like every year we've gone into it going, Georgia's the best team. Georgia and Ohio State versus everybody else. You know, Georgia and who? And this year, I mean, I got, you know, 4, 5, 6, 7 teams that I'm like, okay, they might be fighting for that next tier of, you know, the next five.
All right. So given the opening weekend games, this is going to get kind of shook a little bit early.
Fast.
Because you've got Ohio State, Texas, and then you've got LSU, Clemson. So to me, that next wave of who could be there really in a hurry in that top five realm, LSU is there because they go in and they beat Clemson week one. With by the way, they also have their quarterback returning in Garrett Nussmeier, and a lot of transfer portal additions. Then it's a whole different ball game for them in terms of
the expectations of season.
I agree.
I want to play LSU week one. Like Brian Kelly ain't been successful in week ones. First of all, but like I'm gelling a lot of people, Brent, from the transfer portal and from other places that I'm trying to figure out what they do great, what they do best, how they fit. Like, again, a lot of times you have in your head like what somebody can do and you see it in practice, but it's totally different in the game. And then situationally, how do they address certain things? Like, there's a lot of things that I think they're going to be figuring out on the fly. Brent, I don't have questions about Clemson's roster. I don't. Like, we can go to defensive line that I think they'll have two guys drafted in the first round next year. Like, yep, a quarterback drafted in the first round. At least three wide receivers that will be drafted and play on Sundays. You know, eventually, like, yep. I mean, I a cornerback that will be drafted in the first round. Like, I'm all in. Like, I don't know how you
know. That's their phrase, right? Hashtag all in. That's the Clemson thing.
I'm taking my poker chip and I'm putting it all in. Like, the Tigers have exactly what they have needed. The Tigers have exactly what they had when they won championships with Dabo Swinney. Yep. They have the exact same recipe with the great quarterback, with the weapons, with really good defense. Like, this is going to be a great season. Strap it in. I'm all in. You know, take that to the bank. I'm ready all for right. Clemson.
When we potentially talk to Dabo later this summer, you got to tell him how enthusiastic you are about and how much expectations you have about his team, and he's going to shut you down and be like, hey, we got to do some stuff first. We got to put it to the pavement first. Some other teams just kind of sitting there thinking, hey, look, we probably deserve some top five love. We were in the playoffs and our quarterback returns. So Arizona State with Leavitt, SMU with Jennings. You know, those are Illinois kind of hanging around that top 10 fringe with Altmyer back and a lot of the guys that they have back. So I think it is going to be a crazy season, but yeah, the coaching part,
would like a word.
South Carolina's, yeah, with Sellers, very much so. They weren't in the playoffs, so I didn't really list them.
No, but they were right there.
But I did say Illinois, so I guess I could. I got to say
too. Illinois wasn't in there either, bro.
Yeah. But yeah, I do think though, when you think about top five and all this, or going into the season, the coaching change is as much of an issue as the roster movement for me. And if anything, when you look ahead, okay, week six, week seven, okay, what's not right? It might be that issue more so, or Knowles elevating Penn State, or you know, some other issues in other places. But we'll see.
I think Knowles elevates Penn State right away. I don't think that's debatable. Like we've seen that, and it takes a little bit of time for systems to incorporate. But I feel pretty confident as long as Jim Knowles is coached, like that he's going to be able to come in and take this squad and overperform whatever his players are. How about that?
There you go. And you heard it here. David Pollack is hashtag all in.
All in, baby.
Tigers. Because I think that's their thing, right? Isn't that their – I've seen that.
Yeah, that's their slogan. That it has been It has been since Saban's been there. Or, I mean, sorry, since Dabo's been there.
Yeah. Careful there with that slip. So, yeah, now we get to look at each of these teams moving forward. And maybe we'll have our own – do our own sort of – top 20 and look at each team and maybe some schedules, maybe predict some conference champions and do some predictions as we get into the summer. That's going to be a must do in the summer. Oh, yeah. By the way, I did forget to mention, cause I told him I would, the fall of North, there is a mutual friend of ours who started and founded a Coney Gold barbecue sauce, and you need to get you some. I think that's his.
Get you some.
James Argo is very much enjoying the negativity and the not so great things that are going around North Carolina as a North Carolina State Wolfpack fan. So he is enjoying that.
Yeah, he hates hard on UNC. Hey, we want to get to that Dellinger article too, because that was pretty.
Oh, I saw that with what he was talking about in terms of the 105, right?
Yeah, yeah. Just and the roster sizes, you know, for college football, you know, trying to get the rosters to a listen. I'll be very clear where I stand on this. Like, I think walk-ons are a huge part of the game. It's the tradition is just so cool to have them. And I think it's amazing. And I think the more, the better. The problem is not all of them are created equally. And some programs have the ability to bring on more. And so being a competitive advantage is what some people look at. So they're trying to agree on the number. But here's the interesting thing about this. Like, okay, so right now in college football, everyone has the same power. Okay, so everybody's kind of got the same say. So to make rules and stuff like this, it's got to be unanimous. Okay. Like they've got it, Brent, the ACC and Big 12 and the SEC and the ACC, the Big 10, they all got to be on the same page. Starting next year, they don't. Like starting next year, everything changes and it becomes the Big 10 and the SEC. And they run college football. They make the decisions. Like, I mean, we get that, right? Like, this is,
yeah.
Like, right now, there's a little window of power. So, how do you play this? What can you give up concessions wise if I'm in the other conferences to try to like get some better future? Because I got news for you. If I'm making these decisions and I'm the SEC and the Big 10, I'm like, nah, I'll hold off. I'll wait, pass. Unanimous decision. It has to be unanimous that we vote on this, right? Yeah, I'm good. Hard pass. Because I run everything next year. I get to decide. If I want four automatic qualifiers from each of my conferences, so be it. We'll figure a way to work it out. Like, so college football in an interesting place, and that Dellinger article is a good one to read about how the power struggles kind of a real thing and, you know, will continue to be when you're enforcing rules and trying to find roster sizes and all the other thing that goes with it.
And Ross Dellinger is works for Yahoo Sports, does a great job of covering all of this.
Good articles, always.
Yes. And maybe we should try to see if he wants to come on and talk about all this stuff. Because the 105, like from a coaching perspective, I know I saw Kenny Dillingham talking about it. He's like, hey, look, I'm letting these guys go now, or at least kind of explaining to them, I don't think you're not going to be a part of the 105. Let them find opportunities now. He said, because I don't want to tell a kid August 28th and sorry, you're not going to make the 105. And then now he's screwed and lost in the season of eligibility and that kind of stuff. So it's a tough sort of realm to exist in with that.
I thought that was pretty cool with Dillingham, though. I mean, that's pretty cool to be.
And Matt Rhule did a thing where he was going to like have some sort of scrimmage with those guys. I think I saw. I didn't look at the details, but where a lot of those guys were going to be able to put some tape, put stuff out on tape to find, be able to find a home. So the roster part. And I think too, with some of these schools, like, and specifically because we've watched it more so at Georgia and watching them practice, like the physicality of their practices. And now you're down another 20 guys that you can't practice with. You're going to like, have to work smarter and manage health and things of that nature and contact. Because now you got 10 guys that are injured during the season and,
yeah, well, these other guys are all. You just practice regardless. It doesn't really matter. You're going to practice
right,
like that. But the difference is here's where there's the competitive advantage. If I'm Georgia or Texas, excuse me, let's do Texas, and I have that budget and the ability to spend more money to keep more guys around, that's where some people say that's a competitive advantage, right? Like more bodies, you know, guys that would be on other rosters. So it's not scholarship, but I'm paying them. Like I'm still paying them to be here. And I have the ability to pay them. So now I have a roster spot. So what that means, but there's so many good stories that you see throughout college football every year of guys getting drafted that were walk-ons that developed and took time. And I hate that, you know, maybe you don't get those experiences because of the money and the changing landscape.
And the rules. Yep. The landscape is changing. Still fun. And it's still going to be fun to talk about it. I mean, what? 3 months, and then it's August, you know, and then it's right around the corner. I know there's on the dog vent on UGA Sports, somebody has every day it counts down how many days it is till the season. It's 100 and something, but it'll be here before you know it.
It'll be here before you know it, and we'll be here. So you guys keep tuning in. If you like it, keep hitting that subscribe button. Keep hitting the like. We'll keep doing this throughout the season. We'll get Kirby in July. We'll probably get Dabo in July. We'll keep giving some names. Maybe we'll take some suggestions from you guys too. Maybe get some players too. It'd be fun to have a few players on. But appreciate y'all joining us, and we will see you guys next week.